So, I went on, when he started coming home hurt, what did you do about it?
I started escorting him to school and picking him up the moment class let out. That's been for the past 2 months. He hasn't had any more injuries. But I have to go to a conference tomorrow morning and...
You want someone to keep an eye on him?
That, yes, she said. But I also want you to find out who has been trying to hurt him.
I arched an eyebrow. How am I supposed to do that?
I used River's financial advisor to pull some strings. You're expected to arrive at the school tomorrow morning to begin work as the school janitor.
I blinked. Wait, Bigfoot has a financial advisor? Who, like Nessie?
Don't be a child, she said. The human tribes assist the forest people by providing an interface. River's folk give financial, medical, and educational aid in return. It works.
My imagination provided me with an image of River's shoulders standing in front of a children's music class, his huge fingers waving a baton that had been reduced to a matchstick by his enormity. Sometimes my head is like an etch-a-sketch. I shook it a little, and the image went away.
Right, I said. It might be difficult to get you something actionable. Pounder's eyes almost seemed to turn a green-tinged shade of gold, and her voice became quiet and hard.
I am not interested in courts, she said. I only care about my son. Yikes. Bigfoot Irwin had himself one formidable mama bear. If it turned out that I was right and he was having issues with another child, that could cause problems. People can overreact to things when their kids get involved. I might have to be careful with how much truth got doled out to Dr. Pounder. Nothing's ever simple, is it?
The school was called the Madison Academy, and it was a private elementary and middle school on the north side of town.
Whatever strings River Shoulders had pulled, they were good ones. I ambled in the next morning and went to the administrative office and was greeted with the enthusiasm of a cloister of diabetics meeting their insulin delivery truck. Their sanitation engineer had abruptly departed for a Hawaiian vacation and they needed a temporary replacement. So I wound up wearing a pair of coveralls that were too short in the arms, too short in the legs, and too short in the crotch, with the name Norm stenciled on the left breast. I was shown to my office, which was a closet with a tiny desk and several shelves stacked with cleaning supplies of the usual sort. It could have been worse. The stencil could have read Freddy. So I started engineering sanitation. One kid threw up, and another started a paint fight with his friend in the art room. The office paged me on an old intercom system that ran throughout the halls and had an outlet in the closet when they needed something in particular. But by 10, I was clear of the child-created havoc and dealing with the standard human havoc, emptying trash cans, sweeping floors and halls, and generally cleaning up. As I did, going from classroom to classroom to take care of any full trash cans, I kept an eye out for Bigfoot Irwin. I spotted him by lunchtime, and I took my meal at a table set aside for faculty and staff in one corner of the cafeteria as the kids ate. Bigfoot Irwin was one of the tallest boys in sight, and he hadn't even hit puberty yet. He was all skin and bones, and I recognized something else about him at once. He was a loner. He didn't look like an unpleasant kid or anything, but he carried himself in a fashion that suggested that he was apart from the other children. Not aloof, simply separate. His expression was distracted, and his mind was clearly a million miles away. He had a double-sized lunch and a paperback book crowding his tray, and he headed for one end of a lunch table. He sat down, opened the book with one hand, and started eating with the other, reading as he went. The trouble seemed obvious. A group of 5 or 6 boys occupied the other end of his lunch table, and they leaned their heads closer together and started muttering to one another and casting covert glances at Irwin. I winced.
I knew where this was going. I'd seen it before, when it had been me with the book and the lunch tray. Two of the boys stood up, and they looked enough alike to make me think that they either had been born very close together or else were fraternal twins. They both had messy, sandy brown hair, long, narrow faces, and pointed chins. They looked like they might have been a year or two ahead of Irwin, though they were both shorter than the lanky boy. They split, moving down either side of the table toward Irwin, their footsteps silent. I hunched my shoulders and watched them out of the corner of my eye. Whatever they were up to, it wouldn't be lethal, not right here in front of half the school, and it might be possible to learn something about the pair by watching them in action. They moved together, though not perfectly in sync. It reminded me of a movie I'd seen in high school about juvenile lions learning to hunt together. One of the kids, wearing a black baseball cap, leaned over the table and casually swatted the book out of Irwin's hands. Irwin started and turned toward him, lifting his hands into a vague, confused-looking defensive posture. As he did, the second kid, in a red sweatshirt, casually drove a finger down onto the edge of Irwin's dining tray. It flipped up, spilling food and drink all over Irwin. A bowl broke, silverware rattled, and the whole tray clattered down. Irwin sat there looking stunned while the two bullies cruised right on by, as casual as can be. They were already 15 feet away when the other children in the dining hall had zeroed in on the sound and reacted to the mess with a round of applause and catcalls. "Pounder!" snarled a voice, and I looked up to see a man in a white visor, sweatpants, and a t-shirt come marching in from the hallway outside the cafeteria. "Pounder, what is this mess?" Irwin blinked owlishly at the barrel-chested man and shook his head. He glanced after the two retreating bullies and then around the cafeteria.
"I guess I accidentally knocked my tray over, Coach Pete."
Coach Pete scowled and folded his arms.
"If this was the first time this had happened, I wouldn't think anything of it. But how many times has your tray ended up on the floor, Pounder?"
Irwin looked down.
"This would be 5, sir."
"Yes, it would," said Coach Pete. He picked up the paperback Irwin had been reading. "If your head wasn't in these trashy science fiction books all the time, maybe you'd be able to feed yourself without making a mess."
"Yes, sir," Irwin said.
"Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy," Coach Pete said, looking at the book. "That's stupid. You can't hitchhike onto a spaceship."
"No, sir," Irwin said.
"Detention," Coach Pete said. "Report to me after school."
"Yes, sir."
Coach Pete slapped the paperback against his leg, scowled at Irwin, and then abruptly looked up at me.
"What?"
he demanded.
"I was just wondering, you don't by any chance have a Vogan in your family tree?"
Coach Pete eyed me, his chest swelling in what an anthropologist might call a threat display. It might have been impressive if I hadn't been talking to River Shoulders the night before.
"That a joke?"
"That depends on how much poetry you write," I said.